Welcome to our show, Examine Life, on KKRN at 88.5 FM in Bella Vista at Round Mountain.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Pat.
Plato said that the unexamined life is not worth living. Tonight, Pat and I are going to discuss another decade in the 20th century.
Tonight is going to be the 70s and how what happened then we are still have repercussions of and still affects our society.
And the 70s is a culmination of the 60s, but we've talked in the previous programs on this series from the 1900s and World War I and leading into Prohibition in the 1920s and the end of the 20s and the Great Depression and the 30s and the moral changes and societal changes leading into World War II and the 1940s. And the 50s was kind of a resting period from all of this and a cultural kind of solidification that probably wasn't healthy. And then the wonderful explosion of the 60s, loaded with good and bad things. And here we are today.
And the ending of the 1960s that poured over into the 70s that are really significant. One was we landed on the moon in 1969, which was a culmination of NASA. But that really entrenched our society and our nation in science.
And I love that. I was a science fiction fan from probably when I was 9 years old. And seeing people land on the moon was just incredible for me.
And it would eventually bring about Star Wars, the movies.
Yeah, and Star Wars, that was another iconic thing that happened. All of the movies either just looked completely fake, or in the case of 2001, they tried too hard to make it real. And Star Wars, they just took the old pirate movies and turned it into science fiction, and it was an incredible experience back then.
One of the other things that really poured over from the 60s that happened in 1969 was Woodstock. And it was kind of a giant drug party. But it was a culmination of a lot of things socially.
And it was kind of the end of the 60s. It culminated with a big rock and roll drug fest. I mean, essentially, that's what it was. And, you know, there's not much production in a drug fest, but some of the music was incredible. You know, in the 60s and the 70s, the music was, there was a lot of music about society and about philosophy. Even the Beatles and even some of the rock and roll bands, they weren't just writing songs about boys and girls being in love. They were writing about the right thing to do and the way to behave and philosophy. And the music was just different.
Well, there was a lot of love and peace type of promotion, the gentle side of life. And that kind of in the 60s and the rolled over more into hard rock and Metallica in that extreme as it moved through the 70s.
Right. It just became, in the 60s, we kind of had some movements to go back to nature. And then there were beliefs, you know, coming to the front about philosophy and religion. And in the 70s, it kind of settled back into society looking at its own navel again. And so it changed from all that idealistic music to, it ended up, the 70s ended up
We still had
disco.
Yes, but we still had a lot in the 70s of that homemade idea.
Oh, yeah.
It was knit or crocheted or made out of cotton. Breastfeeding became famous again.
And hairy armpits.
Yes, and the communal living, that kind of stuff became popular. And a whole generation embraced that. It was so different from how young people lived up until then.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so there was a whole generation that embraced that thought and promoted it, and it became part of society, not only in our music and our movies, but culturally, even down to the drugs. It was no longer on back alleys, drug use. It was now in mainstream America, kids everywhere. You know, the flower children turned into blooming idiots.
It was. I think they needed a more, you know, their thinking had changed. I mean, alcohol was the high of choice in the 50s. And I think in the 60s, the 50s were so stiflingly boring and had NUI. And in the 60s, they wanted something different. Marijuana had been around forever, and so had peyote and those other natural drugs. They had always been around. Heroin had been around, and it was laudanum back in the 19th century, but it had been around forever. Opium had been around. But in the 60s, they were looking, you know, some people expanded their minds without drugs, but a lot of people felt like, you know, well, we can do marijuana because it has a different effect. And but people went overboard, as we always do.
But it poured out of private, doing it in private in your own home or a car or something, into the streets. It, you know, we had thousands of kids in the streets doing it. They were stoned.
Well, I think they were. It was the typical thing that all generations have done. They were basically in your face to the adults of the previous generation. And the adults of the previous generation were, you know, let's have a cocktail and everything is by our culture. And they were just rebelling. I can remember in San Diego, your favorite town, deliberately smoking pot in front of a police station because I could.
And it was almost acceptable. The police expected young people to be doing drugs or drinking or, you know, the van going down the side of the street with all the flowers painted on the side of it. You knew what was going to come out of that van.
It's just like, it's funny that a lot of the liberal people today want to think that they're, because back then the things they were doing were thinking outside the box. And now there's so many people that are in lockstep, they're not thinking outside the box at all. Their ideas have kind of calcified from the 60s and the 70s. Nothing has changed for them.
And think about it. A lot of those kids of the 60s are now in their 60s or 70s, and they're in control of a lot of money.
Yeah, and they've become the beast that they wanted to conquer.
And they have refused to grow old. They think they are still young. And it's not that they're not young. It's just, it's not the same as when you were 18, 20, and 25. Society has passed you by.
Right. You know, I don't care what generation you lived in and what the wonderful new culture is that you brought to the planet, it's never the ultimate culture. And some of these people have not moved from that culture at all. And you have to constantly move and grow. And sometimes things that you thought were bad are good. You know, there's so many atheists that just hate Christians. But I don't understand why. I don't get their reasoning why. Back then I could see it because it was firmly established and it was my way or the highway, but it's not that way anymore, and yet they still hate it. They can't move on.
A lot, too, that we're still living under the same influence is the universities. A lot of this culture was born in the universities. Kent State was a prime example of the abuse of power on college campuses. But it was still because a lot of what started in civil rights movements, gay rights, female rights, all of this came about at the university level and poured out into the streets. Or kids dropped out of college and decided to live the communal life.
Right. And I think where they went wrong, and we'll be discussing, you know, current times soon in another few shows, but Kent State, the administrations of the colleges were overbearing and wouldn't allow any free thinking. And guess where we are now? The same exact place, except now it's the people who were protesting then. Their thinking hasn't changed in 30 years, but it's their thinking, or you know what, don't come to my campus. So they're the exact monster that they hated back then.
But they have gone to the extreme opposite of being not closed mind, but to the point of accepting everything at face value and not putting any restrictions on anybody for anything.
I'll have to disagree with that. Accepting what they find acceptable at face value. They're not accepting everything at face value, just the ideas that have calcified in their heads.
Possibly.
Face it. They're not open to Christianity. They're not open to maybe some restrictions on behavior. They're only open to the things that they believe they should be open to.
Well, what happened in the 70s, and I feel like this is where the political correctness started, really, took root in the 70s, is because of the minorities coming out into the streets, gays, females demanding fair pay, the Civil Rights Act taking effect, and all of the minorities started, you could not say anything critical of any minority. So it became politically correct to never criticize anybody for anything. And it also started that no one's responsible for anything because you can't be criticized for it. So that political correctness got its roots in the 70s, and now the minority, no matter who it is, I don't care if it's women or gays or some religious group or an atheist or whomever, but they are jerking society around, and we're allowing news to be captivated by some minority news segment. I don't care if it's abortion or whatever, but we're missing the big picture of what's happening in our country because we're so focused on what's happening in some minority group somewhere.
Right. Well, that's what I mean. There's fewer rights. They were supposed to be battling for freedom, freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of culture. And actually, they're more restrictive than the previous generation before their famous time was. They don't allow any kind of speech. I mean, we have microaggressions in college now where you say something that somebody might take offense to, or some people can say, you're exacerbating my PTSD. And all of a sudden, you have to be quiet because you don't want to exacerbate somebody's PTSD. It's gotten out of control. You can't think or talk unless certain people agree with what you're thinking or talking about.
We have allowed society as a whole to become so restrained by the thin-skinned people of a few. And that's not right either. I should have the freedom of speech to say whatever I think my mind is thinking, even though it's contrary to yours. I'm sorry. But my rights end where yours begin, and your rights end where mine begin. And we have taken the ability to have freedom of speech. We've erased it practically with political correctness, and now we can't criticize anybody.
And as you said, that all started in the 70s, There was a lot of good things that happened in the 70s, and a lot of those things that we're talking about now, they were good things in the 70s. You did have to start thinking more carefully about the people, you know, the prejudices that you had. You needed to break away from those.
Yes, we needed to abandon a lot of the prejudice, but we went too far.
Well, that's the problem. People can't let go. It's like we've made no, they're kind of showing or thinking that we've made no progress. We haven't moved at all, so we still have to be so careful about what we say. And yet the younger generation, when nobody's around, they're saying politically incorrect things all the time because we should have moved on past that now.
And think about comedians. The black comedian makes more fun of black people than anybody, and it's hilarious.
Right.
Someone who, a Jewish comedian, makes more fun of Jewish people that is absolutely hilarious because they speak the truth, and we realize how absurd and funny we live.
Yeah, and we're all absurd and funny.
Yes, in one manner or another. And so I think we've had, 40 or 50 years now of political correctness. We need to go back to the middle of being respectful of one another, being tolerant of one another. But I expect to have tolerance in what my opinion is, being able to voice it without getting torn to shreds.
I agree. I mean, hopefully some people will think about this and realize that we've just moved on too far. There are some wonderful things that happened in the 70s. I mean, for us TV addicts, the VCR was introduced. I didn't have one in the 70s because I was a poor white boy. But the VCRs allowed you to have freedom watching television now. You didn't have to just watch what the three networks had. You could have movies.
And there were lots of things on television.
And it only cost you $100 to get a movie that was on a VCR cassette.
And there were lots of movies being made in the 60s and 70s, a lot of them cultural society things. They weren't all like now. Everything is how many ways can we kill people? But we had a bigger diversity. Westerns were still being made.
Oh, yeah, the introduction both in the 60s and the 70s. In the 60s, it was Laugh-In.
Oh,
with,
yes.
It was an attempt to just be completely offbeat about humor, completely different kind of humor. And then in the 70s, we ended up with MASH, which was about the Korean War, a comment on the military industrial complex primarily. And then we had Saturday Night Live.
And the beauty of Saturday Night Live was they would insult anybody. They were not politically correct, and that's why everyone loved them, and they thought they were hilarious, because nobody was off limits.
Yep.
They would actually shred people on that show under the guise of comedy.
Oh, it was a wonderful show. I can remember going to toga parties with all the nurses that I worked with, and we would shut down the bars at night and then go home and watch on
Saturday Night
On
Live.
Saturday nights, it was always Saturday Night Live. We had big parties.
And we came out with things like I Spy, where you had a male star it happened to be a crime show, but it was still a black-white show that was highly popular.
Right.
We had crossed that barrier in television of having major actors that were black.
And I think what's keeping us from completely clearing the barrier now is the people that are still hanging on to the hatred. There will always be bigots in the world, but for some reason, all the bigots want to try to maximize the bigotry as much as they can.
Well, so does the extreme on the minority that is being somehow righteous about.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The bigotry on both sides. There's bigotry against other races, and then there's like the promotion of bigotry against like against yourself.
Well, it's the righteousness of being bigoted against somehow.
Right.
And I think if everyone would not be so thin-skinned, that maybe we could get past this and quit bringing it up, quit limelighting, putting the spotlight on this particular segment. Take care of it. Address it. But do it under the way society embraces it.
And allow speech so that people will say what they're going to say in the open so you can attack it.
That's
if
right.
It needs to be attacked.
It can be argued. It can be discussed. And I think Saturday Night Live was the perfect example of the contrary to political correctness and how good it was and freeing it was to hear it on television.
And one of the things that that I found attractive in the 70s, you know, we had landed on the moon in 1969, which is a wonderful thing. But in the 70s, you know, the space program was underway and we were going back and forth to the moon and we built the Skylab. And
satellites, yeah.
I talked before about the 50s when the advent of real hobby electronics got so many kids interested in science, and the science fiction movies got them interested in space travel. And that's what made those scientists come about that got us to the moon. And then in the 70s, there was a new fascination with the space program because it was actually going back and forth, and it promoted a whole nother generation of science.
And we have to look back at all the things that happened financially, too, in the 70s that we are still under the guise of. And one of those was in 1973, we had those gas prices, the gas or lack of gas, I guess, when OPEC had what they called the Arab embargo on the U.S., shipping oil to the U.S. for gasoline. And we forget that gas prices were 30 and 35 cents a gallon, and we were outraged when they went to 50 cents a gallon.
Yeah.
And before it was over, it was a dollar.
And when they had 86, we had gas lines, and we were going crazy. And you know what's interesting about free enterprise, for instance, is that the OPEC restricted their oil output and raised the prices, and that was their way of dealing with the pricing that they wanted to control. What's interesting now is that you notice our gas prices have gone back up, but not the way we expected them to skyrocket. Because there are more sources of gasoline now, and OPEC knows if they raise their prices, they just won't sell any oil.
Right. And we tried, in 1977, we had legislation trying to reduce consumption. So they added a horrific tax. And did they ever do away with that tax? No. We still have that huge gasoline tax, not only the federal tax, but now every state has added sales tax on gasoline as a revenue source, all under the guise of let's reduce consumption. And we use more of it now than ever.
And the other part of that guise is let's improve the infrastructure. You seen any improvements?
Well, we did build the Alaskan pipeline in the 70s and brought...
No, I mean, by infrastructure, I mean the highways and the bridges.
Oh, no,
everybody's
no.
talking about how they're pretty much on their last legs, and we've made all these taxes. But I digress from the 70s.
But that tax started in the 70s,
yeah.
Is when the government said, we're going to try and reduce consumption. We'll put a tax on it. That'll fix it.
A lot of things happened in the 60s and 70s that got us where we are today. A lot of the welfare state was created back then. You know, people are worried about the drug war today and how if we legalize drugs, there will be a mass increase in the use of drugs. And I contend, you know what? If you take away the necessity for people to have to work to eat, then they will go ahead and use those drugs if you make them legal, because they can not only afford to buy them, but they can use them without having to go to work. You make hunger an important factor again, the drug use won't be a problem. You can legalize all the drugs.
Interestingly, a third of college students back in the 70s used pot.
Right.
That wasn't heroin, cocaine. That was just strictly pot.
Right.
And it was only subsequent after that that we got into LSD and meth and cocaine.
Well, no,
LSD
started in the 60s.
Right. But, I mean, it was big use in college students. And only a third of the college students were using pot, and yet they thought that that was our biggest problem. And we had the war on drugs. We started the war on drugs in the 70s. We started the war on poverty, the war on crime, and all of those things are worse now than they were in the 70s.
Well, it's because my favorite subject, we asked the government to control them for us.
And they declared war. One president or another would declare war, and that would end it, right?
When you take away the need for people to make a living and create their own shelter and create their own food, you take away a lot from their life. There's no point to life anymore when that happens. You know, they say, well, you can express your culture and learn music. They don't want to do that. Most of them are just, you know, they want to get high, get drunk, and have food.
Right.
It's the human animal.
And like I say, in the 70s, we had the declare war on all these things. And today, we still have the problem, and it's bigger than ever. Crime's more prevalent than ever.
But
so
I'm sure a lot of politicians got elected in starting these wars. We're going to solve the crime issue. We're going to solve the drug issue. We're going to solve this and solve that. So you just elect me.
And government cannot control social issues. People's behavior is beyond government control. No matter what law they pass, human beings will find a way around it.
That's right.
But if they want to do it.
They still keep trying to pass them. A lot of women's rights were improved. Pat and I disagree on how extensive they were, but there were increases in women's rights in the 70s.
Well, women in the 60s, women were really restricted in their clothing. It was the start. When you entered the workforce, you had to wear a girdle, you had to wear a dress, stockings, high heels. You were not allowed to wear pants to work. That was unheard of. And the 70s gave us the freedom from that. Of course, women burned bras. But, I mean, we still had we went to the hot pants. And from there, we brought it back down to, okay, you can wear a suit with pants. You know, and then it got to be you could wear any top with pants. But that was an evolution that started in the 70s. And we started getting magazines like Cosmopolitan that addressed women's sexuality for the first time ever. It was a big freedom for women at that time.
Now, what about the man who shows up to the corporate job in a t-shirt? Do you think he would have a job?
I have no idea.
You really don't?
I mean, there are plenty of people at Apple, Microsoft, that never wore a suit.
No. We're talking about the 70s.
You said the corporate America.
We're talking about the 70s. Would he have had a job if he'd have showed up in shorts and a t-shirt?
Probably not.
Okay.
But women weren't going to work in shorts and t-shirts.
No, they were relegated to their costume and men were relegated to theirs.
But again, women were given a choice finally after decades of being controlled on what they wore to work.
And
it wasn't by their choosing or their comfort.
And men still weren't. They still had to wear the suit.
Only if they wanted an executive position, which women were cast out of. The glass ceiling was there in the 70s. You could see that job, but you could not get there.
To our listeners out there, you should hear this discussion when we're off the air.
Well, I lived the time when women were not paid the same amount as men for any job. Okay. And I also watched where you were hired in at a job and 6 months later a man was hired in above you, but you were required to train him into his job because he was going to be management. Women were not allowed to be management. They were not allowed the benefits. I worked for Bank of America and women had no stock options, say. And it was only in the 70s when I can't remember the company, but I think it was Reader's Digest, was sued for millions
right.
of dollars.
Reader's Digest.
Was sued the first time by a group of women because they were denied benefits. And when Bank of America had to pay stock options to women who had worked there for more than, I think it was 5 years at the time, they were appalled because now women were going to have stock. That meant they owned part of the company. And they were always never allowed to be part of that benefit program.
And the 70s changed a lot of that?
Yes, absolutely. And it was through the court cases that the Supreme Court ruled that you could not hire a woman and decline her benefit that you paid a man just because she was a woman.
In sports, Billie Jean King took her case for equality to court, the tennis court. In the battle of the sexes, she bested a mouthy Bobby Riggs on national television.
That wasn't exactly the corporate world job I was thinking of.
No, I was talking about courts.
I know. And sports, ironically.
Women in the 70s were making great strides. They got their own magazine of liberation, Ms. Magazine.
Yes.
And they had male centerfolds.
I think they did have. I don't remember it, but I think they did have.
That's what history says.
Probably.
I never read the magazine, so I don't know.
I never did either, but I'm sure that it was available. I just wasn't one of the ones that read it. But there were a lot of changes in not only women in wages, but when you were interviewed for a job, you were asked if you were going to have children. Because if you were going to have children, you were not worth as much to the company.
How much time do you want to spend on this?
Not very long. I'm just saying the way it was, and we are still, to some extent, have changed dramatically. But it was because of the actions of women in the 70s who demanded to be paid. And we still haven't reached parity, but we still made great strides. I was hired at Bank of America as a female. Of course, I had no skills. I was hired at minimum wage. After I had worked there for a couple of years, and minimum wage went up, and I got a raise. I was insulted. It was like, really? I'm working for minimum wage because they gave you a monthly salary.
But there was a movie that Dustin Hoffman made that said that as a cultural statement of the movie, a social statement, that a man whose wife had left him so that he was the sole parent and had to spend time taking care of his kids actually lost his job. So the argument I've been giving you is that I think it happened to women more because back then they were more likely to be the child's caregiver and were going to have to take time off, which was going to take away from their benefit to the company. But the movie's social statement was that that happened to men, too, who happened to be men who had to take time out for child care, that they weren't worth as much to the company either.
A rare exception. A man, when
Because women normally were the child-rearing people.
But when a man was hired, was he ever asked, are you going to have a family?
No, because it wasn't standard routine for the man to have. They didn't ask if he was going to have a family. The crucial question isn't, are you going to have a family? The question is, are you going to have to take time off a lot for your family?
And he was never asked that. And every woman was asked, are you going to have a family?
But what happened in the Hoffman movie was that he wasn't asked that. But when it started to happen, he got fired.
And that was long after the 70s, I bet.
No.
Because women were just...
Whenever men couldn't perform, they were fired. Corporations are monsters. They don't have any room for sympathy. They're there to make money.
And it was to the detriment of women that they made all that money and they were paid much less than men. And in the banking industry, they employed more women than men. And so they got away with it for a very long time because it was the men who were in control of the pay that women got.
We better move on because we could do this all night long.
It's probably time for a break.
It probably is getting to be time for a break. This is Examine Life, and I'm Steve.
I'm Pat.
And we're talking about the 70s tonight. We're going to continue on. It's the bottom of the hour. This is KKRN, 88.5 FM on your dial in Bella Vista at Round Mountain. We're a community-supported station, and you need to support your community. Send us an email, examinelife@kkrn.org. Let us know what you think. If you like our show, if you hate our show, if you want us to talk about something different, if you think I'm being mean to Pat,
Or if you think I'm too big a feminist.
But give us input. Tell us what you think.
My hungry heart. Leave me one thing before we part. A kiss to build a dream on.
Join the discussion. KKRN boasts a variety of talk radio, both from local and syndicated sources. We want to stimulate thoughtful and meaningful conversation. KKRN can offer more real conversation because we are supported by listeners. You have a voice.
Make them believe they're true. Oh, give me your lips for just a moment, and my imagination will make that moment live.
The infinite possibilities of music are showcased by the eclectic panorama of song styles that you can find on KKRN Radio. You won't find our musical explorations on more mainstream commercially driven stations. From classic country to new age, from classic folk to classic rock, from blues to jazz, and music from outside our country. You'll find it all on KKRN listener-supported radio, radio that makes you listen. We're back.
This is Examine Life, and tonight we're talking about the decade of the 70s and the impact that it had on us that we still feel today in many areas. One of those areas was the Vietnam War. It was the first time that it was on television and the nightly news with embedded journalists, and the body count reported every single night.
Now, the 70s was kind of the termination of the war. Nixon was elected, I think, in 68. Or was it reelected in 72, right? On the promise that he was going to honorably end the war, but of course he didn't. We ran out of there with our tail between our legs.
That was in 1973 that he agreed to stop fighting in Vietnam, and Cambodia would eventually, in 75, fall to the communists.
And I was part of that, and we actually literally had to run out. We were running away from the enemy, and I remember things that happened. You know, the military was hated by a lot of the people that were against the war, who needed to pick on maybe the government, but not the people that were there. They weren't there because they were warmongers. They were there because they felt a sense of duty, and there's nothing wrong with that. And they didn't all commit war crimes, but they were treated miserably by a lot of self-righteous people that I still have no use for today.
Like Jane Fonda?
That's just one. There are a lot of ordinary people around the country that I just have no use, because they don't know. They think they know, but they don't.
There were a lot of protests against the Vietnam War, and a lot of it was our men dying there. We also had draft dodgers who would go to Canada so they wouldn't have to serve. But those guys were not the ones who were protesting. It was a lot of Hollywood people. It was a lot of college students who were afraid, and I don't blame them. You know, that's a horrible thing to face, knowing that the statistics coming out every night are people dying. Why would you want to volunteer for that? But we still had the draft system then. So it wasn't a volunteer war like it is today. You were drafted and sent.
There were
no questions.
And it's okay to be afraid, but, you know, man up and admit that you're afraid. Don't be some self-righteous, I'm for peace in the world.
And we also had back then in the early 70s where the government tried to suppress the newspapers from reporting on things such as the Pentagon Papers. And it was only through the Supreme Court that said, no, you cannot suppress the press. You know, where are they today? But that was because we had journalists that were embedded with the troops in Vietnam, and the government didn't like all the negative news coming out about it.
And a lot of those people that were protesting war, they were right in the sense that the war was the wrong thing to do, mainly because of the way we were executing it. They don't realize the pressures that our government had by, you know, Russia was expanding. And you could say all you want about all of the politics, but Russia was expanding and China was expanding. And it was an attempt to keep our place in the world. But the war was conducted horribly. It was conducted dishonestly. And there was a lot of things that you could say about that war that were bad, just not about the people that had to be there.
And China was admitted to the UN in 72, and Nixon made a trip to China. He opened the door to the United States trade with China. and that was one big accomplishment of his. But he, Kissinger was very, was his, I think, chief advisor, and he would eventually become Secretary of State. And Kissinger negotiated a lot of things for the United States that benefited us that we still get good things from today. But when the war was over, we had a big problem with inflation.
Right.
And Nixon ordered wage and price freezes to try and curb that inflation. And he thought that he could strengthen the dollar. And he took us off the gold standard. And financially, this was appeared to be a good thing. Except during that same time when we were having those gas price wars with the OPEC countries, he actually went to Saudi Arabia, he and Kissinger, and convinced them to only sell oil in U.S. dollars. And to this day, we are no longer on the gold standard, and they still only deal in dollars for what they call petroleum dollars.
I guess that would be another support pillar for my general contention that we shouldn't have the government controlling anything.
Well, this is somewhat where we interfered with the world economics, you might say, at that time. And today we are facing the consequences of that because there are a number of countries, China one of them, China, Russia, India, Brazil, and a few countries who are now looking to create a new international dollar. And they believe that China wants to go back on the gold standard. And if they do that, they would demand our debt be paid in gold. And could America come up with, what, $1 trillion, our debt, in gold? I doubt it.
I know there's all the theories that Fort Knox actually has no gold and all these. I mean, who knows what they actually do have.
If they did have any, could they have that much?
You can't trust a government to be honest with anything. But, you know, the gold standard, if you think about it, people used to trade goods. You know, I needed food, you needed wood, we would exchange things.
Salt
was a big thing because you could carry it in small quantities and use it to make change. But the point is that we traded goods because people needed goods, and gold was a good. People wanted gold, and it was incorrigible and all that. And when we took it off the gold standard, we took away a fundamental, essential part of what money really was. And I think that's why we're so vulnerable now. We made money into something that it should never have been.
And we created an economic falsehood, you might say. One, getting Arab countries to only deal in U.S. dollars, we're interfering in world politics pretty much.
Right.
They're demanding. And this is where the World Bank and all of the other powerful economics has come from.
The old unintended consequences.
Yes. And we have suffered a severe setback financially over the last decade because of economic shenanigans. But if we went back to the gold standard and the U.S. did not have gold to back its debt, we would really be in big trouble. It would be a recession, depression you could not imagine.
And what's making it worse is our nation has become a nation of non-workers. So we're not really producing anything. So we have nothing to back our money up. We don't have people trying to make a living to put food on the table. So our money is kind of pointless anyway. The whole thing is built on nothing now.
And Nixon had the mentality of he was always right. He did not want to be challenged. And Watergate happened in the 70s, in 1972.
And Watergate was about him it really wasn't even an attempt to do anything super devious. It was him thinking that he was the best thing for the country. His ego was that big.
And he could find out what the Democrats were doing, so he could sabotage what the Democrats were doing when he was, you know, in control of the country pretty much as president. But that was in early 72, and he wanted to be desperately reelected in November of 72, which he was, despite Watergate, because it hadn't come out at that time how involved he was with it. And it wasn't until, I think, 73 or 4 that he was named a co-conspirator under that Watergate. But he had many of his high-ranking officials who quit thinking that they could save him. And it didn't happen.
Right. Well, it was just completely out of control what he did. There was no way to save him. He did a lot of strange things. I mean, people consider him just a typical conservative, but he did wage and price controls, and he did a lot of socially liberal things. He was not he was not a typical conservative. He was a terrible president. But a lot of his ideas were about government control, though the wage and price controls. I don't consider him an actual conservative, but that's what he was voted on.
Well, in August of 1974, he was the first president to resign as president of the United States. And in the previous, just shortly before that, his vice president, whose name escapes me right now, we all know who he is.
President who?
Under Nixon. Who Agnew.
Oh, yeah. Spiro.
Yeah, Spiro Agnew. He resigned as vice president, so he wasn't there at the time. So Ford, who was the chief of, the minority party? House of Representatives? And he became president when Nixon resigned. And there was no vice president, so he got to pick one, and he picked Nelson Rockefeller as his vice president.
You see, I don't remember that.
Yeah, and they would not rerun. Ford pardoned Nixon because he didn't want it to continue, the scandal to continue to hurt the American public. And he also pardoned all Vietnam draft dodgers. And he took a lot of heat for that and decided not to run again. And we got Carter.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a whole different thing. What did that lead us into?
Yes, but we are still dealing with those consequences of Nixon's activities of the economic tampering.
You know, Nixon did some things. People, again, consider him to be a conservative, but he proposed a plan that would have guaranteed every American family an income of $1,600 a year, which would be about $10,000 a year currently. And I know that's not a lot, but that was guaranteed income. You could hit the road. And
that's when gas
income.
Was a dollar a gallon.
Yeah, and he urged Congress to pass a comprehensive health care plan that would guarantee everybody full health care. He was not a conservative president, and a lot of his ideas are what frightened people into the conservatism of the 80s.
Yes, and we're still...
Carter finished that job for him, but...
yeah.
The over-liberal tactics of the 70s are what led us into the overly conservative tactics of the 80s. People don't understand, you overdo it.
Yes. And the other thing that happened in the 70s that we're still dealing with today is the Arabs. Terrorism poured out of the Middle East. Up until then, it was always within each country. They were attacking Israel. Israel was in... defense attacking back. And it was in the 1970s that we had Arabs hijacking jets from other countries. So it started to pour out into other countries.
I think the little bit of history that I know on this has led me to kind of a feeling that what happened was is in the 50s and the 60s, the Arabs tried to beat the Israelis with war, and they failed. So they started finally in the 70s of doing the hijacking because, they were just not a power that could field an army that could do much, apparently. So they took to the terrorism tactics. And that's not a good or bad thing. That's just what you do when you're not powerful. That's what America did against Britain.
And it's also what got the world attention about the conflicts between the Israelis and the Palestinians and Arabs. And when in the Munich Olympics, when there were 11 Israeli athletes killed,
right,
it really, really stunned the world as to how dramatic the terrorism really was within the Middle East.
And so that was a smart move on their part, at least, because at least they accomplished something. In the wars, they all kind of looked ridiculous because they kept losing. So they were able to, when they started doing terror tactics, they were winning, in a sense.
And they would demand ransom. Money. And today we still see that the terrorist tactics are demanding money, but it has evolved into suicide bombings that were originally just hijackings.
And that's something I haven't done the research on and I'm curious about is when did the actual suicides start taking place? Were they a lot earlier in the Middle East only? I mean, why would they do it in the Middle East? At some point, they started deliberately killing themselves as part of the plan, and that was a change.
Yes, but in the 70s, it was when the world really took notice, when we started getting jets hijacked, that the Arabs or the terrorists were really serious about, and I don't even think that it was in the news that they were Muslim or Islam. It was just terrorists.
I think it was Arab against Israeli primarily. Yeah. Maybe on the Arab side, they were doing it for religious reasons. I just don't know. But that wasn't publicized.
That's not how we saw it in the news. It was Arabs were attacking or terrorists from the Middle East.
Right.
And Beirut, Lebanon, those types of places were constantly in the news as having civil wars. And we still feel the effects of that today. I remember vividly meeting somebody from Lebanon, and all they could talk about was the war and the conflict in the Middle East, and I was somewhat oblivious to it. You know, it was like, that's, you know, miles and miles from here. I have no idea what they were even talking about. And now it's, you know, we have to pay attention.
I've always been kind of a news junkie, so I remember it and remember hearing about it. And what I don't remember is Beirut, the Marines getting killed. I think that was a suicide because it was a truck.
But that was much later.
Yeah, it was. It was in the 80s.
I think the big thing in 1979 is when Iran seized our embassy
right.
in the U.S. And Carter was just, it was...
He was helpless because,
yeah.
you know, when you think that you need to pacify the whole world, you're going to be helpless because the world is just not made that way. And I don't know when people are going to get over this idea that you can pacify bullies into being nice to you. Bullies start being nice to you when you punch them in the nose. That's when they start. I've had that personal experience. That's when they start being nice to you.
And Russia was in Afghanistan in the 70s. That's when they went to Afghanistan thinking that they could take on more territory. They've always kind of pushed for this. We'll take over. There's a conflict there and we'll move in. The Arabs were... You know, they were not going to have any of it.
No.
The Afghanis never did surrender to the Russians. The
nope.
Russians finally gave up.
Yeah, that was their Vietnam.
Yes. And I think Carter, maybe he would have been thought of more favorably if it hadn't been for the embassy issue and all the failures of him to be able to get the people back. And it was not until Ronald Reagan that they came back. And it was like a black eye on Carter's administration for his whole life.
And what's interesting is it's the same thing we're going through now with our current president. It's this pacification theme that's giving him all the strength. Carter, when Reagan came into office, Reagan didn't have to do anything. All he did was threaten. When I get in there, I'm going to get our hostages back. And that's all it took. Carter was one of those peaceniks that believes, again, that you can pacify the world into being nice. So they were going to do what he said. As soon as Reagan came in there saying, I'm going to go in there and kick some butt and take names, all of a sudden they're negotiating and we get our hostages back. It's real simple to understand the world. I think some of these people live in this theoretical world in the colleges and they believe something that just isn't true. They're not studying human nature.
And the world perceived Ronald Reagan, who was in the 80s, actually, but they perceived him as the Wild West cowboy.
Yeah.
And so unpredictable. He'd shoot you. You know, this was the iconic Western cowboy idea is he lived with a gun. And I think he created fear in other countries because of that persona of our movies.
He wasn't afraid to use the language, you know, about the axis of evil, or was that Bush?
Yeah, that was Bush.
But Reagan had the evil empire, I think he called the Soviet Union. He wasn't afraid to use that kind of language, and that's what the world needed. The world just needed to know. I mean, if you're going to have one culture that extends itself around the world and influences, why not have a culture that lives by a constitutional rule?
Well,
you know.
Well, that's our opinion.
I mean, if we go away, somebody's going to fill that vacuum, and if it's not somebody nice, heaven forbid.
Yes, and I think the Middle East has seen the consequences of that over the decades, that terrorism, violence creates violence, and they have had nothing but repeated violence there for 50 years, 60 years. And it's like, when are they going to recognize that only they can solve their problems and only they can decide to live in peace with one another? Why do they have to all be the same?
Right. I'm with a lot of the anti-war people that think we ought to just let that part of the world deal with itself. as long as we over here produce our own oil and make sure that we have what we need for ourselves, let them live their life and do what they want to do with their oil and everything else. I'm all for that.
And I think Obama is in a position of there is no win in Iran or Iraq or any part of the Middle East. No matter what he chooses to do, there is no winning solution for the United States.
No, he would have to do some very violent things because nobody believes he's going to be tough anymore. If they think you might, their actions are going to be attenuated a little bit. They don't believe he'll do anything. His red line's been stepped over too many times. So there's nothing there now. He'd have to do violent, warlike acts in order to convince anybody to negotiate with him.
And I don't think that that's the remedy either. I don't think he has a good option. His choices are bad choices.
Yeah.
So I kind of agree with no boots on the ground. I don't think there's any American life should be taken again for the Middle East. We have tried and tried. Russia has tried and tried. Britain tried. France tried. They need to solve their own problems.
Right. No, I agree. If we get attacked again, we find out who did it, we go in there against anybody's wishes, and we blow them to smithereens, and we say, okay, we're leaving. Do it again. We'll be back. That's what we need to do. No more nation building. No more saving other countries. If we have allies that are necessary for us to have that ally, sure, we can go defend them. But allies we need to have because we need them, not because we just want to be nice to them. We need allies that are good for us. We need to start being a little egocentric as a country.
And I think we should stop all foreign aid to the Middle East because all we're doing is financing all sides.
Right.
And I think if we took away all of our money and said, okay, you guys figure it out, and once you've found peace, then come talk to us and we'll help you rebuild your nations. But to continue to send billions of dollars over there, they never wind up with the people. It always winds up with the
right, just like our tax money going to Washington never ends up with infrastructure or people or the schools. It all goes to administrators and bureaucrats. Same thing.
A couple other things that came out of the 70s was nuclear protests. In the 1970s, we had, I think it was 79, we had the Three Mile Island
the
meltdown.
Coke bottle incident?
Yeah. But we started to recognize that not nuclear power was maybe not the answer. And there were a lot of protests, and it got the limelight on the cracks in the armor, you might say, of nuclear power.
Right. And we, even though we were doing a lot of space program activities, we did slow a lot of that down because the government wanted to spend money on social things.
But we had the first test tube baby was born in London in 1978.
Right. And Patty Hearst was kidnapped in 1974. Ted Bundy was in 1974. And the Terracotta Army in China, that army that they found underground that was built out of clay, they actually had mercury in there. They had a whole layout of this entire city, and the rivers and so on had mercury in them to simulate the water. And when they opened that cavern, can you imagine what that air must have been like?
Oh yeah. And what they wondered what they died of.
And each one of those hundreds of warriors was an individual face. They didn't have the same faces. It was incredible.
Find. Yeah. We also came up with AmeriCard in the late 70s. Actually, I think it was early 70s.
And I remember those commercials.
Yeah, the Bank AmeriCard, and that morphed into Visa. But until then, we did not really have consumer credit. We had what they called a diner's club, which I think is now American Express. But it was only for business, corporate clients. It was not for the average person. And Visa became the first consumer credit that anybody could get a credit card and use it instead of money.
And speaking of credit, a Datsun 210 was $3,800. A Dodge Colt was $4,700. Medium eggs was 25 cents a dozen. And Miracle Whip was $1.09.
And you wonder what those bell-bottom pants cost.
Yeah. Well, in the 60s, they didn't cost anything because people made them. And then in the 70s, we incorporated into those god-awful leisure suits.
Oh, yeah, and straight hair, no makeup. and tie-dye. And isn't it interesting that tie-dye is coming back?
Well, you know what's fascinating to me is the women had this straight hair, and the men, we all started getting wild hair.
Yes.
I mean, a lot of white people were sporting the afro.
Yes.
And then the rest of us, I remember my hair was pretty wild looking. I mean, it was never manageable anyway. Now I don't have any, so it's much more convenient. But it's amazing how the styles went. And those leisure suits, you look at, man, look back at them, and they were horrible. And they're probably still in the landfills. That stuff never went away. That polyester.
And speaking of straight hair, think about how many of the hippies from the 60s and 70s, now in their 60s and 70s, have straight-haired ponytails again.
Right, right. You got to admire dedication.
Yeah, and how everything comes full cycle. I expect to see bell-bottom pants any day because they were so, you know,
there,
the disco age.
You know, there
age.
Are some. You'll find, it's funny nowadays, you find young people who might emulate the 60s. You'll find some emulate the 80s. People are still interesting.
Yes, and how we get so much of our culture today recycled, the big jewelry that's coming back, the big chunky stuff. Remember the giant hoop earrings of the 70s?
Yeah.
They're now coming back.
And disco. You gotta love disco.
I'm sure there's bars and restaurants somewhere, nightclubs, somewhere that have disco balls in
them. Oh, yeah, there's retro. There's yes. definitely retro. You have to love all the decades. They had their times, and they all had iconic times. That's why we're going over these.
People
need to look back at history, and it's all there now.
And we're still impacted by each of those decades in some manner.
All the way back from 200 years ago, even.
And we need to reexamine, okay, let's go back in history and relook at how Nixon tinkered with the economy and how devastating that can result 50 years later.
That's right. So look at your politics. Look at your personal life. Examine things. Don't just take what people tell you. Examine life. There's more than what you're being told by, I don't care who it is.
The pundits, the political pundits, everybody is giving you only their point of view. It is up to you to really examine what they're telling you. Go back in history and look at if it's an economic issue, if it's a cultural issue, whatever it is. Go back and take a look.
Look at what's real. Don't believe what people tell you. And be honest with yourself about what you believe. Be honest with yourself.
And no matter who you are, your rights end where the next guy's begin, and his ends where yours begin.
That's right. The libertarian motto, don't take my stuff and don't hurt me. This has been Examine Life.
I'm Pat.
And I'm Steve. We've had fun talking about the 70s. It was a great decade.
Yes.
Except for those leisure suits.
And a few other things. But all in all, it has impacted us dramatically today.
We're going to be playing some recorded shows for about the next month. Pat's going to be gone on vacation, which is totally unfair. And so we're going to be playing some of our older shows. And we'll be back on
July.
So I hope you've had a good time. This is KKRN 88.5 FM on your dial. Community-supported radio. Support your community and tell us what you think. Bye-bye.